talking about civil rights for the poor, talking about the ongoing Beach Flats controversy. We were listening about 20, 30 minutes ago to Phil Baer's latest update on the meetings the last week, and mostly around the housing element of the plan around the Beach Flats, and what, or I should say, the lack of housing and the destruction of housing and the hype around the housing. We're going to be hearing a little more from Phil on that now. We interrupted him briefly to do a quick update on Pacific Avenue, take a few takes from that, and hear from a caller. And by the way, if you are interested in calling in, pro or con, please do. Our phone lines are at long last open, 427-3772, 427-FRSC for the numerically impaired, is the phone number, 427-3772, and our lines are open. Now we're going to return to Phil Baer on the Beach Flats, and if you call in, we will interrupt Phil's discussion with your calls, just giving you an idea of how important you are.
Not unexpected, and if this is becoming something like traditional Santa Cruz election, the people who are supported by people like Wormhout and Patton, that is to say the scant progressive candidates, have usually fared better than the people who were endorsed by the Sentinel, to the degree that that there was a difference of opinion. You know, I think Patton and Wormhout are some big guns that have suddenly been drawn into this disagreement, and it's real encouraging. It shows that that this thing is really expanding beyond any sort of you know, our Mayor Beach area working group.
Why has this taken so long, Phil? Why have they taken so long to speak up on this issue?
Well, I think quite frankly that there was a lot of caution. They didn't know how it was going to go, and regardless of their personal feelings about it, weren't going to, frankly, put their necks on the line until it looked like there was the wherewithal within the larger community to really make a vital issue. They weren't going to be the first. They waited until they saw that there was a lot of resistance, basically coming out of the Beach Area Working Group and the Beach Flats Neighborhood Association, and a few others, Western Service Workers Association, I should mention. They waited to see that really accumulate.
Now, at this meeting on...
And jumped in on it. Right. Not the most courageous way of approaching it, but we were very glad that that they did. And I think it's indicative that people like that don't jump in unless they think they are on the winning side, or at least on a very credible side.
Right, and have a chance of winning.
Yes.
I guess, at the Wednesday meeting, there, of course, it was largely led by, what was the name of the woman who did most of the leading of the discussion?
Veronica Lopez.
Veronica Lopez, who really was quite passionately expressing herself around the issues and urging people to speak up and to speak out.
Definitely has emerged as one of the most dynamic leaders of the local Latino community.
And many
quite
did.
A bright, impressive young woman.
Indeed. And many did speak up and out, but how many signatures did you end up, were collected opposed to this?
Let's see, we had one petition that was essentially a condemnation of the Third Street realignment and the amusement park expansion that was made to be signed by virtually anybody. I think we got about 20 signatures on that one, and then we had another one that was made to be signed by either residents or property owners within the Beach Flats. And I think we got 12 signatures on that, and have since received some more.
You know, some of the key points that I noticed were that there were a number I would call of working class or lower class people. Who mostly Latino, who spoke about how the educational system had failed the Beach Flats. There was no school for the Beach Flats, which was that was sort of a new point to me.
Yes. Well, it shows the degree to which these people, in spite of all of the generalized lip service paid to them, nobody is really observing this situation with much detail at all. The truth of the matter is that Beach Flats kids have been bussed around all over town to schools way out of the area, and not just to a single school, which, you know, you could take the entire Beach Flats Latino population and put it in any grade school in the city, and they still would only be a minority of the students. But instead of doing that, they've taken a few here and a few there. For some reason, I'm sure there's some sort of political quota concept going on there, but it's the local Latinos have always resented that the way they would seem to be sort of used to meet somebody's numerical.
Well, it sounds like a dispersal of a culture and the dispersal of a community.
Absolutely.
And also the dispersal of their political power in terms of being in one school district or area.
Yes, and it would change from year to year. Bizarre. Very little stability to it.
The other thing I noticed and learned from that meeting was that the, as I said, even upper middle class people who were faced with this prospect of dislocation and the promise of some housing, and let's clarify for the listeners, how many guaranteed units of housing are there for Beach Flats emigres or refugees?
Oh, there are absolutely zero units that are guaranteed for the people who will lose their house.
And we're talking about little apartments to take the place of houses with backyards and so forth?
In some cases. In other cases, the people are now living in multi-unit places without backyards. But the point being is that a certain number of units have been promised to the degree that promises are meaningful in a situation like this. But those are units. There has been no guarantee that the specific human beings who will lose their present housing will be eligible. And there's lots of indications having to do with minimum income requirements and other eligibility qualifications that I'm absolutely persuaded that 90% of the people who will lose their homes will not, in fact, qualify for the replacement housing. And the other night at the Latino Affairs Commission,
and that was
they were almost openly acknowledging.
That was on, and actually that's the next thing I was going to ask you about. That meeting happened right across the street from where you had this previous meeting, and 24 hours later, correct?
Yes.
And tell me about that meeting.
Well, it was the Latino Affairs Commission meeting on which they had invited people with Mercy Housing Charities, the nonprofit that would be the developer of the relocation project.
They've guaranteed they're going to build some units, is that correct? Is that
guaranteed? I don't know. If they didn't, I don't think anybody could hold them accountable in any sort of legal or financial way. They said they're going to.
I mean, there has been no contract has been made, for example, to...
They don't even own the land.
So, I mean, has money been apportioned? Is there a specific, offer being made?
The redevelopment agency says that it has set aside an amount of money that will be contributed to it. And they have access to certain other sources of funding for this kind of project. Whether or not they have sufficient funding, there are numerous obstacles, and mostly it has to do with the funding, as I understand it, is available for certain kinds of projects within certain kinds of eligibility standards, and they can get money for what they call affordable housing, but what I would think of as being down near middle class housing.
That would not be available to the overwhelming majority of people, given what they earn.
Eligibility having to do with people between the 30th and the 60th percentile of the Santa Cruz median income, which is something like it was for Sycamore, where a family of four had to earn and be able to prove that they earned something in the area of $22,000 a year in order to be eligible. That was a minimum income requirement. That would leave these people out. These are low-income people.
So what happened? First of all, what was this commission that was meeting, and what's their function here?
Oh, I couldn't speak to that. I'm not sure who organizes it. I'm not even sure whether it's a city or a county commission. I know very little about it. I've just attended a couple of their meetings. A sincere enough seeming people, very little public participation and practically no public participation from Latinos.
How many people were at this meeting on Thursday?
Well, this one was pretty good because a large number of the same people who attended the meeting the night before that you attended at our place were there.
These were mainly Latino residents of the Beach Flats?
Oh, probably 8 or 10, and then another 10 to 12 activists and council candidates, and then, probably at least that same number of city bureaucrats, including the three male members of the current city council. So all in all, we probably had 25 people.
And how did it go? Was there a spirited debate between Kennedy, Rotkin, Hernandez, and the rest, or?
Rotkin got into it. I think they had gone there resolved to sort of stay out of it. It seems a little peculiar to have city council members supposedly speaking from the audience at what is supposed to be a public information gathering hearing. So I think they had tried to stay quiet and just sort of quietly shape and perhaps intimidate the event. But Mike Rotkin has a difficult time remaining quiet for long, and broke into one of his lengthy discourses.
The Tower of Babel, we sometimes call
yes.
it. Or the Towering Babbler, depending on how you say it. So what came of this? Any new or interesting information?
We had several people who were rather pointedly attempting to get some details in terms of exactly what the eligibility standards were, exactly what Mercy Housing's policy was with regard to issues like proof of legal documentation and minimum income requirements, exactly what constituted a satisfactory credit history to be eligible, what constituted a satisfactorily clean criminal history in order to qualify. The answers in all of these matters were very evasive, and people, some of these people, the local Latinos, have been in their present homes, or at least in the flats, for 15 years. In some cases, a few cases of people that were there, they were they were there when Neary's Lagoon was being pushed 10 years ago, or whenever that was, and were played by the body politic. At that time, as you may recall, that project was presented, sold in essence to the public on the pretense of being a solution to Beach Flats housing problems. And the concept was that Beach Flats residents were going to get a first option on those places. And that's how the plan was accepted by the public.
Did they get that first option?
No, it didn't work that way at all. At the last minute, supposedly somebody all of a sudden noticed a little clause in federal law wherein any project that includes any federal money, and a good deal of the funding for that was from the federal government, any federally subsidized project could not identify a targeted eligibility group, a specific neighborhood or ethnicity. It had to be made available through a random lottery kind of a process to anyone living within a much larger geographical area.
So how many Beach Flats residents ended up in the Neary Lagoon?
As I heard at the time, it was about 6.
Out of a total of how many units?
Oh, wasn't that something in the range of 125 altogether? Maybe 85, and then 35 was the seniors common. A lot of units, very few beach flats people.
So this meeting
it makes sense of having been played and made promises that were not kept. So there's this legacy of
right.
skepticism. So these people aren't buying it, and they're not going for this one either. And the whole thing has virtually no support from the beach flats, Latinos,
You say city council candidates, Phil, showed up. Did Linda Steinau, the Downtown Association's Woman of the Year, actually...
Yes.
Well, she's not the Woman of the Year. She's a powerful figure in the Downtown Association. And
yes.
I didn't talk to her much. I had a few brief words with her on the night before at the Wednesday night meeting at your house. But I heard from video journalist and activist Becky Johnson Becky asked her what she thought of all the opposition to the Beach Flats plan. And Linda Steinau replied something like, "I didn't hear anything like that."
Yes.
And did you talk to Steinau and get her sense of what's been going on?
Just sort of reading between the lines based on what she didn't say and what she has consistently not said through the course of this, I have to assume that she has no objections to the BSOL plan at all.
Well, what does this mean? Because she is certainly one of a large combine of merchants downtown that have retail businesses. Does this mean that most of the retail business people downtown are don't agree with Marty Wormhout that this retail extension will be competition?
It seems to be the case. Although I'm not persuaded that they fully understand what's being proposed, I'm hoping that Marty Wormhout's addressing of the particular issue of the drain on their customers that will occur if the retail element of the BSOL plan is allowed to be built. I'm hoping that that will cause a certain light to turn on in their minds. But to date, it would seem that the local economy is doing pretty well, and that the people on the mall, particularly on the north end of the mall, the businesses are doing pretty well, and they think that everything is just rosy, and are not realizing that the economy could turn down very quickly, and certainly even if it doesn't, that there's absolutely no evidence to indicate that this town can support what amounts to more than a doubling of the retail commercial space.
No.
The amount of retail commercial proposed in the BSOL plan is an amount greater than the total square footage of retail commercial space in the entire downtown area.
Now, what about the... if you were to look at the whole process of the Thursday night meeting, what came out of it, if anything, and what do you think this is a small committee which reports back to City Council, or what is their function?
I don't know to whom they report. I don't know what influence they have. I don't know what impact this will have on the process whatsoever. I think from their standpoint, and they appear to be, at least neutral, honest, and earnestly attempting to do something for the Latino community. From their standpoint, if they could actually have sat through the meeting and not come to the conclusion that there is, at the very least, absolutely no support for the Third Street realignment, the amusement park expansion, from amongst the Beach Flats Latinos or any other Latinos or any other members of the public,
What about that Latino Michael Hernandez? Certainly he supported it.
Yes, of course, he's not a Beach Flats Latino, he's not a low-income Latino, and he can't get a Beach Flats Latino to accompany him and speak on behalf of the plan.
So you're saying that of all the people last night, there was not one voice in favor from a Beach Flats resident?
Oh, no. There is no support from amongst Beach Flats residents, as one might logically expect of a plan that basically lops off one-third of the neighborhood, then increases the allowable density and proposes a high-density affordable housing project shoved into the side of the remaining neighborhood with the increased amount of boardwalk traffic shoved right up against the remaining neighborhood. That kind of a plan isn't going to sell in any neighborhood.
Well, can't this be construed as sort of a, let's use an analogy, a kind of a traffic enema to the problems of the gastrointestinal beach flats zone?
No, because the stoppage, I'm trying to plug it into your poetic metaphor here.
I mean, is this a way of flushing away those unwanted Latino elements from an otherwise profitable business area?
Well, I don't think the average proponent of the plan is consciously thinking of this as sort of racial cleansing of the bowels to try to...
Well, sometimes one
of your metaphor here.
You know, the bowels do one thing and the mouth does something else. That happens, you know.
Right. It's a remote relationship between the two, for sure.
And sometimes they're talking shit, as they say. But I get carried away with my metaphors. Did anything come out of this meeting that you think was of interest? And let me ask, actually, you've already answered that question.
I thought the Mercy Housing Project appeared to be more and more distant and less and less likely to really fulfill its promise of providing replacement housing for the people who will be dislocated by the Third Street realignment. I think it was quite clear to everybody that the specific human beings who will lose their homes because of the Third Street realignment, the amusement park expansion, will not be eligible for the Mercy Housing Project. That became pretty damn obvious to everybody, I believe.
What's the next meeting that the people should be concerned about around this issue?
Well, the next biggie is the September 15th, a hearing which I would hope will...
That's a ways
down.
It'll
be a rather dramatic event.
The beach flats, the beach area working group will be meeting, I assume, on Monday night?
Yes. The usual beach area subcommittee meeting, which is three members of the city council who have been meeting every month in the community trailer down here, was canceled for September.
Oh, how
strange. In other words, they've got their deal wrapped up. They no longer need to pretend like that they're attempting to communicate the beach flats, because their efforts to communicate the beach flats have been dismal failures. Their subcommittee meetings, the subcommittee being Kennedy, Hernandez, and Celia Scott as a minority third voice, have just been attacked relentlessly for months on end. So they finally decided that little propaganda ploy had blown up in their face, so they simply canceled the meeting.
So now you are having a meeting on Monday at 7 o'clock?
Yes, sir. Sierra Club.
Beach Area Working Group at near India Joe's restaurant, for those
right
who are
right next to India Joe's, in the same building. I think that address is 1001 or 1003 Center Street. The art center there.
And for those who want more information, of course, you can call
423-0170.
That's the residence of the eminent Bear, Phil Bear, and also Jane Bear, and probably a number of other bears as well.
Oh.
You have quite a number of bears at that residence.
Right, you are.
423-0170.
Right,
and
again.
Got really an informative and articulate tour by Jane, who sometimes gets flustered at a mic at City Council, and actually does much better in her native element, walking around and explaining about what house is what the history is of this, and what the details are, and how the knife is getting, you know, sunk in a little deeper here into the heart of the community, and so forth.
Mm.
I found it very very educational, and in fact, once I can get the thing dubbed, I will hopefully play it on my future Bathroom Spears broadsides. And again, I urge you, as I've been doing frequently, to get someone to the Free Radio Collective meeting Monday night at What Is Art to get their own show for the beach flats itself.
All right, that's good. Hey, by the way, I meant to compliment you on your so elegant Spanish, Robert. That was...
Dankeschön.
Right.
And that was Phil Bear of the Beach Area Working Group and the Beach Area... activist, beach area wise man, beach area wise ass, whatever you will, certainly a man worth listening to. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. And finally, here in the studio with me is the inimitable, illustrious, and dare I say, well endowed. No, that would be certainly not politically correct. Well, it depends on your tastes. Jane Hagstrom. I'm not sure what we used to call you, Jane, in the street shit sheet down in Santa Barbara. Publicity-seeking Jane.
Yes.
Publicity hound Hagstrom, perhaps.
That was your nickname.
Jane, as I mentioned before, is a former Santa Barbara activist who has and is now one of the chief mechanics of that machine and keeps that sucker running smoothly. What hospital do you work for, Jane?
Alta Bates Hospital in Berkeley.
And you are big nurse of the psychiatric ward, right?
Absolutely. Well, I'm rather short, actually. I'm only 5'1", but big-minded.
Big-minded and certainly booming of voice if should the need arise.
I was a cheerleader in high school, Robert.
Indeed. And I'm cheered to see you here today. Let me quickly say that we had intended for this segment to give a quick call to Lighthouse Linda LeMaster over in the beach, or near the beach flats. She's a fine activist over in the Lower Ocean area, and she's kind of waiting on the phone. We're going to talk about welfare. She's an expert in that area. We're going to call her, but it's going to be a little bit later, Linda, so don't give up. Don't go out. Stay near the phone. Keep your radio on, and have a cup of tea, and we will call you soon. After we get Jane here, who is she's kind of surveyed the beach flats area. Actually, you weren't in the beach flats area. You were up near you stayed overnight on the west side, right?
I don't know, wherever the amusement park is.
Actually, is the beach flats area. So you were there. Did you buy any cocaine while you were there?
No, I was engaged in other activities.
There are many claims that the beach flats area is a massive crime scene that is going to be wiped out by some new amusement park rides that will help to, bring law and order back to the Santa Cruz area and remove some of those unsightly low-income people. Now, Jane, you're in Berkeley, and where do you live in Berkeley? Tell us about Berkeley. Is Berkeley, you work for the home...
I live in the Oakland Hills.
In the Oakland Hills.
Yes. In Montclair. It's very middle class.
We are preparing a fire outside to to roast Jane and distribute her among the homeless, her spare parts, and quite a number of spare parts there are, Jane. Let me ask you this. So you do live in the hills. Does this mean you've abandoned your championship of the rights of the oppressed?
Yes.
Yes, it's nothing if not a candid Free Radio Santa Cruz that you're hearing on the air today. Well, let's go back to that period of time when you were still among the unwashed, or at least occasionally.
I always washed. In fact, I washed the homeless frequently.
Yes, indeed. Like Mary Magdalene, you washed the feet of the poor. Actually, that's not true, but you were, in fact, you'd actually wash the homeless?
Absolutely. If I had an ill person that needed to be hospitalized and they were had dirty clothes, I would bring them to my house and wash them before I took them to the hospital so that they would get better care.
I see. So, in fact, you have been nursing the homeless for many a moon, but you've also been engaged in political activity to expand the rights of the homeless. Is that the... something that you've abandoned hope for? Or have you jumped on the Republican Party bandwagon? What's going on?
No, not yet. Not yet. No, in fact, I worked on Jerry Brown's campaign in Oakland.
Is that Jerry, let's do a matrix in Oakland Brown we're talking about? Or hopefully Jerry will, of course, see the light. You know, there has been a program that is now, was successful in Manhattan of essentially depopulating the Manhattan area of homeless people.
Well, I was just in the Port of Authority in New York City, and 20 years ago it was impossible to walk in the Port of Authority. Now it's so clean you could eat off the floor.
Right. Well, that's what's needed is cleaner streets and fewer weirdos has always been my motto. You know, that except of course the ones who are running the country and a few bombs here and there. Well, come on, let's realize it. This is 1998. You're not in the 60s anymore. In any case, the question of Berkeley. Let's return to Berkeley. You're what are you? I called you Big Nurse, but what's that?
And the most distressing thing about Berkeley right now is they're trying to pass a law making it a misdemeanor to be naked in public.
Well, actually, it already is a misdemeanor to be naked in public. What they're trying to do, as I understood, was to make it an infraction so that no longer would those... They actually had the naked people, the explicit players, that were arrested under this law, and the jury refused to convict them. So in order to make sure that they don't do this, they've now taken a move to make the law a misdemeanor. So, I mean, to make the law from a misdemeanor to lower it to an infraction, so they don't need a jury anymore, and you also don't get the benefit of what's called a public defender, which you would.
But do you still get registered as a sex offender if you're naked in Berkeley?
Well, put on some clothes, Jane. For heaven's sakes, I've got to tell you, it's looking a little bit too provocative here in the studio. Jane!
I can't help myself when I get around you, Robert.
This is certainly questionable for a repressed individual like myself to attempt to simulate sexual excitement on the air. This is incredible. Actually, this has nothing to do with my subject matter. As you can see, I've been driven daffy by the arrival of my new... my old friend, Jane. Actually, Jane, you and I have been on the same team on and off for the last decade. We met each other, in 88 or 89 when you were working for the legal, or around the Legal Defense Center?
Yeah, I believe that, we met when we were doing some protests in Santa Cruz when they made it illegal to give away food in public.
And Mitch Snyder?
Yeah, we came with Mitch. In fact, were you in the van? Didn't you have an argument with Mitch Snyder in the van over whether how extensive this protest should be? You guys were really heatedly arguing. Mitch is no longer with us, unfortunately.
Mitch and I had our differences.
I know, yeah. A little competitive, you know.
A little male testosterone stinking up the airways. But what else?
Well, those were the good old days of protest activities, you know, when we actually had some media attention. And that was why I think we were so successful in Santa Barbara, is because the media was very interested in our behavior at that point.
Now, you came down to Santa Cruz in 1996 when we did our 7.5, or was it 8.5, month vigil in front of the City Hall. It was called the City Hall Sleepers Protest. Or vigil, and you were kind of advising us on the reasons why protest was successful in Santa Barbara, and I think we broke it down to a number of things, like Ronald Reagan's summer White House was there, so there was a natural press corps waiting around for stories. You had a Kit Tremaine, an eccentric millionaire, had funded the homeless rights struggle. You had active attorneys who were involved. You had an already existing civil rights organizations, homeless organizations, the Homeless People's Association. You had a large social service provider community that wasn't just sucking off the economic tit of the local, you know, funding sources, but was also interested in basic rights for homeless people, unlike, unfortunately, what now seems to be the case, possibly in Santa Barbara as well, but certainly here in Santa Cruz, you don't see too many social service providers. There are a few. Pushing for basic rights for poor people. I guess Paul Brindell is one who is continuing to push for those rights, and I want to give him a tip of the hat for that. He works for the Community Action Board.
Well, I think it's a little difficult, you know, when you push too much. If you're trying to get funding for your programs from city or state or local governments, then it's a little tricky to be too much of a political activist and rile up the people that you're asking for money for your programs from. And I think we were able to do that fairly successfully in Santa Barbara, because one of the things that we did is we had an organization that was both had a political advocacy branch as well as a social service branch. So the social service branch would go and schmooze with the politicians and the powers that be to give us money, whereas the political branch would then go and do their activities a little bit separately from the social service branch. And that seemed to work fairly well as far as having this dichotomy then, that were we able to get funding.
And I guess since this time, you know, you kind of left that struggle, at least 5 years ago, probably longer. And you've been in Berkeley working now primarily. Are you in an administrative capacity as a... What do you do?
Yeah, I'm a nursing administrator for a psychiatric facility. One of the reasons why I left Santa Barbara was not because I stopped, I lost interest in the homeless, but I simply couldn't get funding anymore for programs. So what we found is that in the 1980s, in the beginning of the 1980s, there was a lot of interest in homelessness. There were a lot of people pouring money into the programs and into the problem, thinking that it was going to change. And when in fact, social programs on the macro system level, such as, you know, the HUD program and affordable housing, went down the tubes, and homeless didn't get resolved through the infusion of local funding into homeless problems, people just got angry at the homeless and started withdrawing support for social service programs. So that's what, what I find is that when they're on the social service scene, there are certain pet topics that come up that people want to fund. So it used to be in the 1980s, it was in the early 80s, it was homeless stuff and shelters and things like that. And then people got bored with funding that because the problem didn't go away. And then they went on to funding programs for crack cocaine babies. So then suddenly massive infusions of funds were given to pregnant women programs and to stop substance abuse during pregnancy and things like that. And, you know, now they've moved on to other topics. So
one of the topics that I've been following here in Santa Cruz, which is perhaps more directly related to you at the moment, has to do with the rights of inmates in the psychiatric system. We have one guy, for example, here in Santa Cruz, activist Chris Brozda, who's successfully beaten back conservatorship with a writ of habeas corpus, and he's also, I guess, secured, well, he hasn't secured his right to refuse the medications that they want to give him. He's willing to take some of them. He's not willing to take all of them. He feels that they impair his legal skills since he's defending himself in court. And as a consequence, last I heard, they were still holding him in solitary in the local jail as a punishment for his not taking his medication. What's the rights situation for your inmates in Alta Beta Hospital psych ward?
Well, there's a lot of laws that are governing the rights of psychiatric patients, and I think it's not so much a problem with people having no rights in the mental health system. I think the biggest problem that we have in the mental health system today is lack of access to care. That because there are cutbacks in funding and programs for the mentally ill that are out on the streets, particularly the homeless mentally ill population, they can't even get into hospitals if they wanted to get into a hospital. You know, if they're extraordinarily psychotic, confused, not eating, not drinking, not sleeping, you know, having a life-threatening psychosis that needs treatment, these folks simply can't access the mental health program anymore. And then what happens is, because they're acting bizarrely in the streets, is they end up in jail. So I think we have a crisis in mental health services for the poor. And it doesn't have to be with what used to happen in the 1950s and the early 1960s, where people were kept in mental institutions for months and months and years on end without being able to get out. Now people have difficulty getting into mental health services and are often discharged early because they have no funding for care.
You got to kind of book a room years in advance.
Yeah, well, so. No, you can't get a room. You can't book a room. You know, it's a revolving door syndrome because people aren't able to spend enough time often in the institutions getting the help that they need.
You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. This is your host, Bathrobes Pierre, Robert Norris, talking to psychiatric administrator and
former homeless activist
Jane Hagstrom of Berkeley. Our call-in number, if you wish to ask her or me any questions or make any scathing statements or comments whatsoever, is 427-3772. We have an open line, 427-3772. Show that you know how to use the phone and are involved in this topic by picking up your phone. That's that strange-looking object over to the right. Aha, we have an incoming call.
Oh. Hi there, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
You know, we're not having a come through here, David. We have a phone, but for some reason it doesn't seem to be working.
You're not broadcasting.
broadcasting. We're working on getting you
on the air, though.
Okay.
I think. Keep talking.
You know, I'm talking about.
You're on the air.
I'm talking about Art Denner's mental
Good.
Health and the Beach Flats. There's a fellow whose parents are very involved in Holy Cross Church and the Peace and Justice Committee of the Holy Cross Church and Peace and Justice Commission of all the Catholic churches in northern Santa Cruz County are very concerned. Miguel Gutierrez was attacked by 7 white men in the Beach Flats. And while down on the ground and being beaten up, he picked up a brick and hit one of them. So now Denner has charged him with attempted murder. And there's no other hate crime charges or anything against these white Aryans. So there's going to be, we're asking everybody to show up at court August 31st, Miguel Gutierrez's hearing. We're asking for his clemency. We're asking for him, you know, to at least be put into rehabilitation where he can work at Holy Cross, which he's always done. He's always been a volunteer. He's a very, very good, wholesome young man that was just attacked by a gang of whites. So I know this may not relate to your topic right now, but I just came back from church and I'm really, really, you know, with all the Beach Flats issues and all the hate crime issues that are coming up, all sort of meeting and joining each other now, we have an issue here where they're all at the same time. Next Monday, a week from tomorrow, I'll get you next Sunday the exact court time. We don't have it yet. So thanks to your guest. I'm sorry if it didn't completely relate, but maybe it relates to the mental health of Art Denner. That's a very good subject.
All right. Well, what mental health, we might ask.
Yeah.
Any comments on the ongoing discussion, or should we simply take what you've said and move on?
Yeah, just spread the word. It's more of an announcement. I'll call later with another announcement on the farm workers.
All right. Well, thank you.
Sure thing.
So, again, the lines are open for any of you who want to make irrelevant announcements. Actually, that's not irrelevant at all. It's certainly related, or if you want to join our discussion at hand, you're listening to Jane Hagstrom and, of course, the very famous Robert Norse.
I do want to say that for those people who currently use psychiatric drugs and need psychiatric drugs in order to function in the community, and function outside of the hospital, there are in process the development of a lot of new psychiatric drugs that don't have the terrible side effects that the old ones used to have. You know, they don't have things like tardive dyskinesia, the newer psychiatric drugs that cause, you know, tardive dyskinesia was a side effect of some of the psychotropic drugs that would cause permanent movement disorders. And a lot of people that take those drugs used to feel a lot of straitjacketing where they, you know, couldn't smile properly and had